Fly James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is Guy James coming to you from the Blue Waters and Sandy Beaches of beautiful Fort Myers, Naples area, Florida, and around the country and around the world as well. Hello to everyone. A beautiful day here in paradise. I hope it's nice where you are as well. We're going to get a little taste of winter weather here next week when we head up to Washington, and so we're going to pack accordingly for that. That's harsh when you haven't been in it for a while. It really is. Oh, well, we'll live through it. How are you today? Hello to everybody on the Head On Radio Network chat room. Glad to see everybody over there. Got a lively group going on there today. And hello to the folks over at Democrats.com and SmirkingChimp.com and Democratic Underground and all the haunts where all our liberal Democratic friends hang out. Glad to have each and every one of you along with us today. We'd like you to join in the program, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you, okay? Give us a call later on. Lots going on today, many things to talk about, and who knows, we might get around to every one of them here pretty soon. I do want to confess something quickly right off the bat. Whenever we find out we've made a mistake on this program of any kind, I like to let you know about it. And recently I reported on the program, I think it was last week, about a press release from an environmental group saying that the National Park Service was not allowing its guides to comment on the actual age of the Grand Canyon. And I want to set the record straight. That report was bogus. It's not true. There was nothing more than a foolish attempt by this organization to get some much-needed notoriety. And that's the wrong kind of notoriety to get. So we will not be listening to that particular environmental group again. So there, we got that out of the way. Mea culpa. Yes, we are heading up to Washington next week on Tuesday. We're going to be meeting with Senator Debbie Stabenow and several other Democratic senators in the afternoon. They're having a Move America Forward conference, Democrats on the State of the Union. That's going to be at the Capitol building, and I always enjoy going to the Capitol for something. And then on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we will be at the Mayflower Hotel doing our program from there. Families USA is having a conference. We'll have several significant guests on, and we're looking forward to that, discussing issues that affect all families in this country. So we're getting our suitcases packed, getting all our tech stuff ready to head on up there. It's not like it used to be. It used to be you had to take a MARTA unit or ISDN unit and all that sort of thing. Nowadays, as long as you've got access to a high-speed internet line, well, all you really need is a laptop and a mixer and you know, a couple of microphones and headphones, that sort of thing. It's not like carrying around a great big trunk full of stuff like you used to have to do that. So, we're looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to breakfast at the Mayflower. Always looking forward to that. Special thanks to Billy Shears, musical director of the Guy James Show. And we're looking forward to meeting up with Billy up in Washington. We're going to get together for one of the shows and dinner one evening, I think. So that's a special treat as well. And if you're looking, if you live around the Washington, D.C. area, one of our regular listeners, and you'd like to join us, well, let us know. Maybe we'll just get a rent a whole banquet room there at the Mayflower and have a big party. Well, if we rent the banquet room at the Mayflower, one of the banquet rooms, you're going to be paying for it. I'd hate to foot the bill for that. I really would. Oh yeah. The Guy James Show treasurer tells us that that's definitely out of the question. Even renting a closet there is out of the question. so much for the big budget of the Guy James Show. 6 minutes after the hour, 866-546-5254. Give us a call. Want to hear what's on your mind today. You know, this voting stuff never seems to go away. It just never goes away. It's always sitting there lurking, these black box voting machines. And Mahoning County, Ohio, that's an area where my wife is from, sits on the Ohio-Pennsylvania border, Youngstown area. And like most of that area of the country, they're struggling with funds to keep their infrastructure operating. And in fact, the county is discussing laying off employees. They're so hard up. And they've got the ES&S Ivotronic DRE voting machines that use batteries that need to be replaced after 5 years. Well, they've had the machines for 5 years. And so they go to ES&S for new rechargeable batteries and the chargers. And ES&S wants $197,500 for that equipment. $197,500 to charge the county for batteries and recharging units. The counties then found a company in California that would provide them with the batteries and chargers for $50,877. Man, I'll tell you, these ES&S and their fellow black box voting machine companies really are raping this country in their efforts to squeeze every dollar out of the taxpayer. So there you have it. Another idea, another example of just how honest these black box voting machines are, the companies that provide them and so forth. Man. Let me see here. You know, this is one of those days where I didn't figure fix a theme up for the program today, something we're going to stay on all day or even half the day. This is one of those days I thought I'd just kind of open it up to you, okay? And I hope you don't disappoint me. 866-546-5254, or it's going to be a long afternoon. So we very much would invite your participation in the program today, most definitely. Where else in our notes here? John McCain, I know a lot of you have seen this deal about John McCain lately. He's in the news and not in such a good way. I wonder what you think about it. I think John McCain is tanking and fast. If you'll remember just a couple of years ago, everybody was talking about, well, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to have John McCain as vice president along with John Kerry. It was rumored that Kerry had actually asked him. And I do remember many Democrats saying, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to get John McCain on there. He's got a lot of crossover appeal. Well, it appears that a lot of John McCain's appeal is, well, it's going away, and it's going away fast. In some of the states lately, a while back, he polled at 49% of the independents, and that's a good poll number. He could have carried 49% of the independents. Now that figure's down to 29%, and it's falling. And this is in several states, and some of the bellwether states for early primaries. And why is that happening? Yeah, I think it's easy. I think it's very easy to understand why John McCain's poll numbers are going in the tank, people finally starting to see him for what he is. He did come across as a very moderate Republican for a long time. He did come across as someone who might buck the trend and go against what Junior Bush said on a few occasions anyway. He wouldn't rub elbows with the fundies that always wanted to hold the Republican Party captive. And it seems that every turn lately, you see John McCain capitulating to one of these groups. Except I do see James Dobson said he didn't want anything to do with John McCain, that he wouldn't vote for him no matter what. Now, isn't that something? Mark my word, John McCain will be kissing James Dobson's ass before this is over with to try and get him on board. He will. He did it with Falwell. He's doing it with all the fundies. But he is a guy that I feel is absolutely obsessed with winning the White House. And I didn't used to think that. But it's very apparent here in the past few months that John McCain will say anything. He'll suck up to anyone, even Jerry Falwell and his ilk. And if McCain runs, well, he is running, I do hope the press rediscovers their tried-and-true word flip-flopper that they used against John Kerry. Because there's never been a greater example of a guy doing 180s than John McCain. Never. You can look around for a long, long, long time and find no one that's made a quick turnaround on issues as has John McCain, just to appeal to voters. So you can talk about Hillary Clinton moving to the right all you want. You can talk about how Bill Clinton did it. Lots of candidates have done it, but nobody has made such an obvious beeline and prostituted themselves to the degree as has John McCain. So, although I was not one who was hoping that he would be a vice presidential candidate with John Kerry, I certainly was not. I wasn't that enamored of him. But I did think he was a good, honest, open man at one time. Shows you even Guy James can be fooled. And that doesn't happen very often with people's... But then again, I don't know John McCain personally. Nobody ever fooled me personally that I know. But, well, they say never say never. And how about Tony Snow? Is he not one of the most, I don't know what's the word for him, insipid? I think I read that about him today. Insipid war propagandist the U.S. has ever seen. He asked the other day, what does Congress intend to give, says Tony Snow, and what does it think the audience is? Is the audience merely the president? Is it the voting American public? Or, in an age of instant communication, is it also Al-Qaeda? Get the idea? Well, here we go again. Congress, anybody that doesn't agree with George W. Jr. Bush on his war plans is an Al-Qaeda sympathizer. That is exactly what they are saying. That's the message they're going to go after again. It worked so well the first time, they thought, hell, let's do it again. And it'll work to some degree, but not like it did the last time. I do think most of the public is wise to these people now. I do know a lot of people who are Republicans who all of a sudden have gone silent, who have no desire to engage me or anybody else in a political conversation. They are ashamed. They won't come out and admit it, but they are ashamed of what they've done. They are ashamed of George W. Bush. And instead of just coming out and discussing it and trying to rub it in your face like they did when he got reelected and coming around and telling us how grateful they were for his presidency and how proud they were to have voted for him, those people have suddenly gone extremely quiet. And who can blame them? But here we are, Tony Snow. They're trotting it out again. Anybody who says that what Bush is doing in Iraq, escalating the war with more troops, anybody voting against it in Congress, why, Al-Qaeda will get the message. And that'll do damage to our country if they find out that anybody's against us. Everybody should be for whatever the president does so that we can all hang together. Or separately. Who was it that said that? Hang together, we can hang separately. No thanks, Tony. I don't want to go along with you on that. They've studied somebody in the White House, whether it's Tony himself or whether I don't know whether he figures these things out himself or Karl Rove or one of his minions tells Tony what to say. But many of these propaganda tenets come right out of the book of Joseph Goebbels. And, you know, that's a name I don't like to throw around casually. But Joseph Goebbels was very, very much interested in propaganda. He was a master at it. And him and Ms. Riefenthal that made the great propaganda movies, and they were fabulous. But Goebbels wrote, propaganda to the home front must create an optimum anxiety level. Propaganda must reinforce anxiety concerning the consequences of defeat. So there you go. Tony Snow with a page right out of Goebbels' book about how to keep people anxious over this thing. And don't let your congressman say anything about not funding this because Al-Qaeda will think we're not together and they'll conquer us and they'll be in your bedroom tomorrow night. That's what they're trying to get to, all right. Ah, yes. 866-546-5254. Let's hear what Granny B has to say about it.
This is Granny B, and I was just thinking about our president. And what is wrong with that boy? He doesn't seem to hear what just about everybody in the country is trying to tell him. That we don't want his war in Iraq. That we don't want every government decision to be in favor of big corporations instead of us ordinary folks. That we want our kids and grandkids to have just as good a chance as his kids to get ahead in the world. President Bush is especially deaf when it comes to his war. He seems to hear the few people who tell him to keep on staying in Iraq, even though most Iraqis want us to go away and leave them the heck alone. He even hears the small number of people who tell him that his idea to send even more American troops to that godforsaken place is a good one. But he hasn't heard his own generals who tell him not to add troops. He doesn't hear the government intelligence agencies who tell him that our presence in Iraq is making the world more dangerous than it has to be. He doesn't hear his father's friends and advisors who say we should get out of Iraq. He doesn't hear us, the voters, who told him in November that we don't like what he's doing with this war. So Bush's problem isn't your normal kind of deafness. It's not that he can't hear at all. It's like those sunglasses that only let certain light waves through. So I guess you could call it a kind of polarized hearing. Everybody has a right to march to a different drummer. But as president of our country, doesn't Mr. Bush have some kind of responsibility not to drag the rest of us along on a death march? This is Granny B, and I was just wondering.
Ah, yes, Granny B, bastion of wisdom. Always listen to your granny. She knows what's happening, Granny B does. Speaking of that, you know, the people listening, Bush always said he would listen to his commanders on the ground. And he's listening to the ones he's got on the ground now because the ones that he had on ground that disagreed with him are no longer generals. They're retiring, you see. So if you disagree with him, he'll look around until he puts another general on the ground who does agree with him. That's how Junior Bush actually works. But, you know, to go along with the theme of what Granny B was talking about there today, who is ahead in this war so far? We talk about victory in this war. You always hear Bush talking about pushing on to victory, to win, and all the Republican. I heard one last night. What's that dumbass from California that's running for president? Nah, the one that's always got a scowl on his face. All of a sudden, I can't remember his name. Duncan Hunter? Yeah. Yeah, he'll get real far in the race. They just hang right in there. They're not about to give up on Junior's line. They're going to stick with it no matter what. I don't know why, but they always talk about winning. Got to win. We got to win. We can't lose. We can't afford to lose. And so who's ahead in this war so far? If you're going to keep score, and then we're talking about winning, then we got to keep score. Are the American people ahead? Are they safer? Are the American people safer? That was the basic premise for going into Iraq in the first place, was it not? Whether it was WMDs or the thought of making WMDs or you're going to take over and blow up the whole Middle East, causing turmoil there. Wasn't that the mission of this whole deal, to make the American people safer from terrorism? Wasn't that it? If we're winning this war, knowing the reasons that Mr. Bush and his people gave for going in the war, doesn't that have to be one of the criteria for knowing whether or not we're winning? Are we safer? For if we're to go to war in there, in Iraq, and to win that war militarily, that is, kill every last terrorist there and make that government stand up, as they're always talking about, if that is the criteria for going to war and winning, and we do that militarily, and our country still isn't safer from terrorists, what have we won? And at what price? Are we safer from terrorism? You know, as well as I know, the answer to that is no. So how about the Iraqi people? Are they better off now? We're trying to find out who's ahead in this war. Are the Iraqi people ahead right now? Are they better off? The killing in the streets in Baghdad, the kids can't go to school, they can't even venture outside the house. Even if their father does have a job, he can't go because he's afraid of getting mowed down by bullets in these right outside his front door. They don't have electricity most of the time. They've got 40% unemployment. And as I mentioned yesterday, almost the entire sewer system in Baghdad has collapsed. Their oil, which has been responsible for 95% of their economy, is about to be stolen by American oil companies, about 75% of it. I guess they're not better off either now, are they? So far, who's ahead? American people? No. The Iraqi people? No. How about the neighboring countries? Are they better off? Bush had painted some sort of a picture of Saddam overtaking all of his neighbors and establishing some sort of a caliphate in the Middle East that he was wanting to rule the whole area. Seems that George W. Bush, militarily at least, was the only one worried about that. It just wasn't possible for Saddam to do that. It never was. He was a toothless tiger. Unless you forget, the one thing everybody always forgets when they talk about military might in the Middle East, do not forget the powder keg that is sitting in Israel. Do not forget the dozens of nukes that they have and their willingness to use them when they feel it's necessary, or even when they feel they're threatened. So that argument never was, never could have been. Saddam was a toothless tiger. So now we've got the sectarian violence brewing in Iraq, and with the Iranians, the Syrians, the Saudis, all of them ready to protect their own interest. Is the region more stable now than before our illegal invasion? Hardly. So let's see now on our scorecard of are we winning. The American people aren't ahead. The Iraqi people aren't ahead. The whole Middle East isn't ahead. So who's better off now than they were before? Who is it? You go to war to win something. Who's better off? You always have to look at who's better off because of a war. Well, who makes the Bradley fighting vehicles? Who makes the helicopters? Who makes the tanks? Who makes the munitions, all those uranium-cased shells? Thousands of pieces of military equipment. Thousands of people of pieces of military equipment, expensive military equipment, has been either worn out or destroyed. And feeding our troops, who's doing that? Who's feeding them? Who's doing their laundry? all sorts of jobs that the military used to do are being done by private American firms now. Who's doing that? I think you get my point. And my point is that a handful of people in the United States are profiting handsomely from Bush's war in Iraq. Profiting like they've never profited before. Making obscene amounts of money from the miseries of others. Obscene sums of money being made by firms that cozy up to our lawmakers and treat them to golfing trips and lavish meals and train loads of cash for their political campaigns. And I guess we can add some of our elected officials to this short list of those profiting from Bush's Iraq war. I think you get my point. There was very little resistance to this war because the right people didn't want there to be any resistance to this war. The Dick Cheneys. The connection to Halliburton and KBR and Bechtel and Martin Marietta and all the other military suppliers who see Bush's war as nothing more than a gravy train for enormous profits. Enormous profits. They've never, ever had it so good. They never want it to end. Think about that. Think about people in this country that do not want this war to end. They're not people of conscience. They don't have any interest in whether or not their massive profits are gained by our military personnel spilling their blood. They don't care. They don't give a damn about that. They send out one of those Bradley armored vehicles, brand spanking new out there. They hope it's blown to hell in a few days. They hope it is. And don't kid yourself, they do. They don't have any interest in whether or not thousands of innocent Iraqis are being slaughtered either. No, in that business, in that filthy business of armaments and munitions and all that military spending, it's business as usual. Only right now, it's a lot better than it's been for a good long time. Because with these people, it's not good enough that in peacetime that they rape and pillage the American taxpayers with their bloated prices on their products and services. Oh, no. It's a nice little war like we're in now that makes them salivate, makes their hearts beat just a little faster at the prospect of billions of extra dollars in profits. It's not enough that they make the obscene profits during peacetime. No. A good little war just really cranks up those profits a lot. What do you think of the attitudes of these companies is towards sending more troops into Iraq? What do you think they want to do? You wouldn't have to guess, would you? It's full speed ahead for these people, and they'll be lobbying the president and the Congress, and already have been, to keep the pedal to the floor with the acceleration of this massive failure. Their massive greed has no conscience, has no end to it. They're predators. They are absolutely predators upon the human species. They're at the very top of the food chain. It doesn't matter at all to them whether we've had a dozen killed in Iraq or 3,000. It's just numbers to them. Numbers are all that matter to the greedy, the ultimate capitalist that are our military-industrial complex. And you've heard it so many times. Dwight Eisenhower was a wise man. When he said to beware of the military-industrial complex, he was the only leader this country's ever had who actually possessed the morality necessary to make that statement. The only one. And when you think about it, the president we have right now, he isn't worth enough to shine Eisenhower's shoes. That's my opinion. I'd like to hear yours. 866-546-5254. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
I've given you a little break from me for a while, but I can't hang off any longer. One thought I wanted to share with you This Sam Farr is a congressman from Monterey, California, and he has introduced a very well-written measure that says that any war powers that had been granted to President Bush by the Congress should be rescinded immediately. And I think that would be the way that it would keep them from their PNAC plan for grabbing Iran and probably Syria. I'm trying to get everybody that hears this and agrees with it to call a member of Congress and ask them to please co-sponsor this, support it, because I think it's the most rational, reasonable method that they can take right now.
Well, it is. And, you know what the only problem is, and always will be, getting enough of those gutless wonders to go along with him.
Well, it would seem to me it's not a threatening measure. It's not like saying, oh, we can't say impeachment, that people will talk ill of me. But this one isn't doing anything to take away from the support of the troops or anything. It's just saying you don't have any more rights to invade. Congress does not give you that anymore.
But you see, Dave, if George loses his war powers ability, he's finished.
And well, that would be sad.
Yeah, he's finished if that happens. And I don't know that he and his backers, those weasels that live underground, don't like to be seen, the ones that are profiting off this war in an unbelievable manner. I don't know that they want to let that happen.
Well, that's very, very accurate. You're one of the few people that sees that and calls it as it is. We are in there because this war is very, very profitable to a small clique, the Carlyle Group, the PNAC crowd. They're making a fortune. They're bankrupting the country. They're borrowing money even by the billions every week, but they're putting it in their pockets.
Well, they're an outfit that can't lose. They sold us all this equipment before the war at monstrous prices and made huge and so it all get busted, broken and worn out now, and they've got to buy more. They can't lose. There's no way they can lose. It's just always good to have a nice war like this to use up all the equipment and get rid of it so they can sell some more even at higher price. They have no conscience.
No, I know that. The one thing doesn't really compute, and that is that they are killing the environment of a planet that they live on. Do they have some underground bubble or something that they plan to be on when they contaminated us beyond belief? They're talking, you know, they want to use, what, low-yield nuclear weapons when they take on Iran? Take out all the... I'm sure they don't want to damage any of the oil assets, which they consider to be theirs.
No, certainly not.
Well,
no, they don't worry about the environment. They don't worry about any of that stuff. If you've got enough money and you exist in this world right now, if you have enough money, you're going to be able to live in comfort the rest of your life, no matter what happens to the rest of the populace, and unless it's an all-out nuclear holocaust that blows up the world, which isn't going to happen anymore, I don't think. But you'll always be able to find a way to keep your family safe, get them away to a safe area, or have safe air and safe water for them, to hell with the rest of the people. But if you got enough dough, you can survive, and, you know, for you and your kids after that, who cares? That's the way they think. Let's use it all up. Yes, we got this world here, and we've got all these species here, all these animals and all that. Who cares if we kill them? We're only going to be here a short while anyway. You know, that's their thinking.
There is no more criminal ilk than what we have. The people that have stolen our government are the worst of all people, and so deceitful, so dishonest. And they have still some people believing them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you could go through the prisons in this country, Dave, and you could find all sorts of people who are there for, what, second-degree felonies and things, accidents they've had, people that have had car accidents and killed people and gone to prison for manslaughter and tons of people that have sold a few ounces of marijuana or that you can empty out half the prisons in the United States for things like that, and their crimes are nowhere near as serious as the crimes of this crowd.
Yeah, New Orleans was a blue city, very much so.
Yeah, it was.
A lot of poor people, black people that struggled for an existence there, and when that big weather hit them, aid was coming from everywhere. They had a hospital ship out in the bay asking, how can we help? We have 50 well-equipped lifeboats, told standby. Water trucks arrived with fresh bottled water. They were said, turn around, go back to where you came from. The hospital ship kept calling. They had a lady captain saying, how can we help? We can de-Stalinize 100,000 gallons of water a day. We have 200 doctors on board. How can we help? FEMA said, back your ship up, turn it around, and depart the area. So what does that tell us, you know?
Yeah, well, it tells us it's not a blue town anymore.
No, but it tells me that there's people on it. Where do you find somebody in prison that has done something like
no,
that?
No, you don't. You don't. You can't. So find the worst mass murderer in the country. Who is it? I don't know who it is right now that's still alive. It's probably on death row. But someone has killed, what, 25, 30 people and all? It pales in comparison to some of the things this administration's done.
Right, right. I thought they were going to grant Manson a pardon and make him the next UN ambassador.
He would have been as good as John Bolton. I think the people in the UN at least would have liked him better. Oh, God. Oh, that's a good one, Dave.
Seemed like the next logical step with what the direction they're going.
You bet.
Thank you so much for everything, Guy.
Thank you, Dave. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Charlie Manson in the UN. Oh, he is one evil boy, isn't he? Whew. You don't see much of him anymore. Charlie's got to be getting older now. I don't know. He's been in prison a long, long time. Bad, 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 bad man. Hey, we're going to take a little break. Why don't we do that right now? And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
This is Cindy Sheehan. George Bush, Dick Cheney, and others launched a war that took my son's life. Strong evidence suggests that in promoting the war, they lied to Congress and the American people, and that in conducting the war, they have targeted civilians, hospitals, and journalists, used illegal weapons, imprisoned without charge, tortured and spied on Americans without court approval. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to begin impeachment proceedings against George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
He's 5 foot two and he's 6 feet four. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Lobau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war.
This is an impressive crowd, the Haves. And the have mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my bass.
Oh, it's true. It's true.
Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
You betcha. 866-5654. That's not the number. 866-546-5254. Man, I'm having one of those days. 866-546-5254. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon. And right now on the phone, over on line number 3, we've got Sarge from Mississippi. Hi, Sarge.
Hey, you know, this is really wonderful. We got a president that took the Persian Gulf and just screwed it up, and then came straighten up to the United States Gulf Coast. Huh? Isn't he something?
Well, it shows you he's good at multitasking. He can screw up a lot more than one or two things at a time. I think he's juggling half a dozen balls right now.
Yeah, he's just, I mean, this guy's just, he's got the reverse Midas touch. You know?
You might say that, and it's brown what it turns to.
Yeah, I was avoiding using the word, but I figured everybody would put the rest of it together.
Yes,
but I was looking at the scoreboard, and it's Halliburton 72, the world 0 in fourth quarter.
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much it.
So we've got a lot of work to do, but you know it's working. Now we're getting our message out because I'm watching the work that we're doing on the Katrina thing, and there's a lot happening. There's a lot more could happen, and like I told you, you know, maybe you can open some eyes in Washington next week, specifically one Barack Obama. And but there's an interest, and you know, the thing is, the D.C. people, they aren't paying attention to the nation. That's the one thing I have picked up from the work I've been doing, because I talked to so many of them, and the really big shock that I get through it is, oh, we thought everything was okay down there. And now with the Saints in the NFC Championship game, they're just building this thing up and showing it like we're doing wonderful down here, and that's just not the case. And I just, you know, we've just got to keep talking to people, but we're doing it. The Guiding Light soap opera has one of them sent me an email, and they are going to be building 3 houses in Biloxi. And they're going to be down this weekend filming, and they're going to take film of this area, which it's going to really shock some people in this nation when they see it.
The Guiding Light soap opera?
Yeah.
My mother watched The Guiding Light when I was a little kid. My God, how many years has this show been on?
It's the 70th anniversary, and that's why they're doing it. The guy told me, the one that sent me the email, said it was 70 year anniversary, and they wanted to give back to the people who have been watching. So they're coming down here, and they're going to build 3 houses, and they're going to be doing filming down in this area so people can see what it's like. And this one guy happens to be a Malloy fan, and he's heard me a lot of times on Malloy. And he's got them to come down here instead of what they were planning on doing. And so this weekend they're coming down, and I gave him the number to Jim Yancey, and I'm going to let him talk to Jim, let him see what all's really going on in this world.
Well, very good, very good. My God, The Guiding Light.
Yeah, that's an old one. And
I don't remember any of the characters from there, but my mother, God rest her soul, my mother had two personalities. She had mom's personality, and then she had the personality, don't you dare interrupt me while I'm watching my soap operas.
Well, you know, I got a funny story on the soap operas. My adopted mother, who was a first classer, but anyway, she was we had two furniture stores, And she was really in the middle of some inventory stuff one day, and the maid called and was just in tears, and she said, "Oh, so-and-so died." And she, my adopted mother, thought there was really something serious, you know, some member of her family had died. Come to find out, it was a soap opera character.
Oh, geez. I met one of those people one time. We back in my hometown, we had a big festival every year, and we used to invite somebody to be the celeb, you know. And we invited somebody one year off that, I'm trying to think of the name of the show. I don't know that it's on anymore. The Young and the Restless.
Yeah.
And we invited the star of that to come, and I got to talking to that gal, and she was telling me about the mail that she would get from people who just were pouring their heart out to this character that they were, that then just believable. Don't let them do this to you, and don't let them do that, and maybe you got to be fall in love with Charlie or whatever's going on. People would actually sit down and write serious letters to them.
Yeah, and you know what always amazed me, what few of them that I listened to, they really wasn't that good acting.
No, I don't recall that either.
I don't I don't see how people fall for this wrestling crap either, but they do. So.
Well, those ones that sit in the front row, you know, that's a documented fact. I can't give you any link to that right now, nor will I ever. But it's a documented fact that the first 10 rows of everybody at the WWF wrestling are all Republicans.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what really scares me, too, is, you know, so many people vote on the basis of WWE, you know. And that's stupid. I mean, that's. But you know, one thing I can definitely see right here on not in my area, but down on the Mississippi coast. I'm about 85 miles from Gulfport, and 95 from New Orleans. But when you get down on the Mississippi coast, and especially in Jackson County, you are seeing a change. I mean, these people are turning on the Republicans rapidly from what all's going on in the Katrina recovery. And now that the word's starting to get out about what we're doing with the Mississippi Mission, you know, Head On Radio Network, Nova M, and unreportednews.net, these people were responding to it, and they're talking about it. And, you know, we're even thinking there's a possibility we may be able to get a liberal network affiliate on the coast before this thing's over with. If we keep responding like we are, we're going to change some hearts and minds on the Mississippi coast. But it's like I've said the last few days, it's time that we not only talk the talk, we've got to walk the walk. We've got to do what we're saying.
That's right. That's
right. And I've got an incoming, I don't know who it is, so I better take it. It might be Dennis Kucinich or somebody.
All righty.
Okay, thanks.
See you, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
That's supposed to be me saying that. No, I got to let you go because I got the president on the other line. Or no, it isn't going to be the president. not now, not ever. Wouldn't that be a hoot? Oh, wouldn't it just be a hoot? 866-546-5254. You know that's the answer, what Sarge was just talking about there, is getting out the notoriety, actually forcing the mainstream media to finally report in depth on a story that begs to be told, the Katrina story. That story is, you know how it was. It was minute by minute, everything while it was going on there the first few days. Oh, my God, we had to know what every reporter was doing and how deep the water was and inches. But once it was over, man, it was over. It was over. When those satellite trucks pulled out of New Orleans and that and the Mississippi Gulf Coast down along in Biloxi and down through there, when those trucks pulled out of there, that story was done. Done. And what a, you know, you stop and think how many days have they spent in the media talking about things like, you know, the girl that was killed in, where was it? Not Barbados, the other place down there. Anyway, and the Terri Schiavo story and the Lacey Peterson story. we get the media hooked on to one of those stories, and they go on, you know, they go on. I mean, they're tragic stories, but they go on and on and on about it. And yet you've got a story like the Katrina story, for example, that is still affecting thousands of people, their well-being and their health, still after all this time, and who cares? Who cares? It's not on the nightly news hardly ever. Well, let's go back to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, this is Mike. How you doing today?
Hi, Mike.
I just had one, just the first chance I've had to listen in on the show a little bit, but I wanted to talk to you about the bill that was passed in the Senate as part of the ethics reform. Would that cover you under having to register as a lobbyist?
That's what I'm wondering. Because I don't know.
That, I'm sure we're going to agree on this topic, but to me that's a little scary. What's your view on the whole topic?
Well, I've got a different view on the whole thing. I'm for not having any paid lobbyist of any kind. None. Zero. Not for any corporation, not for any company, not for any group. No paid lobbyist at all.
I don't think it's just about paid lobbyists. It's about anybody who makes any effort. To me, basically what it looks like is that if you have a different opinion than what your congressman or your senator or whomever, that, you know, whether you're paid or not, if you have more than 500 readers to your website,
I think that would be going too far.
That's crazy.
That could be an abuse on both sides.
That's what I understand is in this bill.
Well, I'm not gonna register. I'll end up going to prison over it. There you go, Mike.
I won't do it. I think we're both in that boat. That's crazy. It's crazy.
It is. But you know, the ethics. I've got a jaded view. Not jaded, but I've got a very strict view on ethics, and I it took me an hour to get it all out, but I'd like to take every dollar out of every dollar. I wouldn't allow them guys to take a pencil, not a meal, not a hamburger, not a trip, I wouldn't allow them in the Capitol building or the Senate office buildings without witnesses being there. I would eliminate all that stuff. Like I've said many times, I'd take a bulldozer to a big D9 Caterpillar to K Street.
Bulldoze K Street. Yeah, I know. And you've been very consistent on that, and I applaud you for that.
I have. I don't believe in that stuff.
No, and I think you're exactly right on your view there as far as, I mean, you've been very consistent on that issue over the last year or so that I've been listening. Now, as far as I would go the other direction. I think the other way to solve the problem, instead of being so militant about it, would go the opposite direction and have 100% full disclosure. I think that solves a lot of the problem too.
How are you going to get that? You've seen how people like Tom DeLay and the Abramoffs and those people have danced around the disclosures. They've made mockeries of it in the past, and yes, they got caught this time, but to get congressmen to disclose things is very difficult. If they didn't take any money, they wouldn't have anything to disclose.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got a good point there, but I mean, at the same time, as a normal function of a business person, you know, going to lunch with a client or any of those things. I mean, how would a senator or a congressman conduct business?
But he's going to lunch with you to try and get your business, to try and get you to spend your money with him, your money. There's the difference. He's trying to get the taxpayers' money, and I just don't believe in these associations. I don't believe in them at all. I have seen too many abuses. I never used to feel that way. But I've seen too many abuses over the years. I mean, it swings both ways, for Democrats, for Republicans, for everybody. No more money in politics. No more, not a dime.
If we could do that, I wouldn't be opposed to it. But if you would, Guy, I would like for you to check in more the Senate bill that they passed as part of the ethics reform and see if what I've understood or what I've heard about it is accurate. I'd like to hear your view on it.
Well, the Republicans, as I understand it last night, they needed, 65 votes to pass it, to get it through. And they had trouble going along with it, and I haven't had a chance to go through all the reasons they didn't go along with it. The Republicans kept it from passing last night. I don't know what they've done today so far.
The only other thing I wanted to bring up with you is I listened to yesterday's show.
Yeah, they're describing you on the internet here in the chat room as that millionaire postal worker from Texas.
Oh, yeah, there you go. There you go. You were talking about student loans yesterday on yesterday's program.
Mm-hmm.
And the question that I have is many of the institutions of higher learning, you know, the colleges and junior colleges and all those things, are run by the liberal side of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they are or not, why don't we try to get them just to lower the cost of tuition? I mean, why does it have to keep going up at 7, 10, 15 times the cost of inflation? Their costs aren't going up that much. I remember when I started school.
You're not suggesting they're making a profit, are you?
Well, I mean, the money's going somewhere. I don't know where it's going. But one thing that I do know is when I started, it was $4 a credit hour here in the state of Texas. Now it's $125 a credit hour.
Well, that's in Texas, Mike, you know.
Yeah, well, and it's cheaper here.
At $4, it wasn't even worth the $4.
Hey, you better watch out. It was the same at Texas A&M, the same at the University of Texas, and University of Houston's got the number one law center, so I think they're.
You're right. When I went to school, I could work in the summer. I always had, you know, a summer full-time job working in a factory or working for the government or whatever I did in the summers, and pay for a year of school, room, board, books, everything.
Yeah.
And I always had a job while I was in school, so to support my all my popcorn I had to buy and the movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
nachos.
Yeah. $5 a week.
I'm with you.
But, now a kid just can't do that. They just can't. And I don't know how it's gotten so out of line. I mean, even at the Ohio State University, the one I'm most familiar with, you're going to pay $10,000-$12,000 a year to go to school there now.
And that's just for tuition only.
And a kid just can't, you know.
No. But the thing is to assume or to suggest that the parent can afford that. I've already told both of my kids, you guys better get straight A's in school so you get a scholarship. Because dad will help as much as he can, but there's no way I can afford to send my kid to.
My father was one of those. All my life, going up through grade school and high school, he said, "Guy, you're going to college, you're going to college, you're going to college." Right? And finally, so I signed up, and he said, "Good. I hope you can afford it." But then you could, you could. But now a kid can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand. I don't know. The point of the thing was yesterday. I think your conversation was that can't believe that the Republicans wouldn't support lowering the interest rate. Well, in my view, all that's going to do is that the colleges are going to sit there and go, "Oh, well, they get to deduct more." And they're going to pay a little less interest now, and we're going to increase the amount they can deduct so we can raise our prices again.
Well, I've yet to see a learning institution that has that attitude. They have no reason to have that attitude because they're not there to make money. I mean, I know even at a huge university like the Ohio State University, they plow all the money back into the school, and there's nothing overly lavish there, and the people talk about sports and all that. Well, that's all raised on a private scale. That doesn't have anything to do with the.
A lot of it is. You're right there. But the other thing that I would like for you to see is Ohio State is one of your loves. I'd like to know how much the athletic director makes. I'd like to know how much the dean of each one of the colleges makes.
Oh, the athletic director at Ohio State only makes about $150,000 a year.
But I bet the provost there makes a lot more than that.
No, they really don't. Speaking of that, we just had we have a small university here in Southwest Florida. Hey, I got the news coming up at the top of the hour. I didn't want paying attention. Got to go, Mike.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yeah, did that ever sneak up on me? Wow. Got news coming up, and I'm talking in just a moment or two. So, the time got away from me. We'll be back after the news. You're listening to The Guy James Show.
The This is the Quality News Network. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki says that his government has detained 400 Shiite fighters from the Mahdi army, which is headed by anti-American cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. He also reportedly complained that the U.S. has not given the security forces enough weapons or money for training. In Baghdad, over the past few days, violence has surged prior to the upcoming U.S.-Iraqi security crackdown. At least 19 people were killed in 6 bombings today. Two Republican senators have now joined the Democrats in a bipartisan resolution against the president's 21,500 troop increase in Iraq. The non-binding resolution was introduced today and has the support of Republican Senator Olympia Snowe of Maine and Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska. Several retired American generals testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee today and criticized President Bush's plan. One general called it, quote, too little and too late. An American sailor died yesterday from a non-combat incident in southern Iraq, according to the U.S. military. The American death toll in the Iraq War is now at least 3,027. Defense Secretary Robert Gates continues to meet with leaders in the Persian Gulf. Another U.S. aircraft carrier will arrive in the region next month, and more U.S. Patriot missiles are also on the way. An Israeli official indicates that his country is ready to release $100 million in frozen tax funds to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. The money is expected to be used for humanitarian assistance and to strengthen the moderate leader's forces. A group of Methodist ministers across the U.S. has started an online petition drive to stop Southern Methodist University in Dallas from building the George W. Bush Presidential Library. They say it is inappropriate to link his presidency with the Methodist name. First Lady Laura Bush is a graduate of SMU. A fire in a high-rise building under construction in Dubai today killed 2 workers. Dozens suffered from smoke inhalation or other injuries. Columnist Art Buchwald has died in his home at the age of 81. The Pulitzer Prize-winning author and satirist was best known for his observations of life in Washington, D.C. over 4 decades. Parts of Texas and Oklahoma were hit with sleet and snow today. There have been at least 66 storm-related deaths in 9 states since last Friday. You are listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news, coming up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A study by the Harvard School of Public Health finds that nicotine levels in cigarettes have gone up by 11% from 1998 to 2005. Time Inc. today announced nearly 300 job cuts at its top magazines. More than half of the cuts were in editorial positions. Bureaus will also be eliminated in the U.S. and across the world. The Commerce Department reported
Check. Hey, I think we're up and running again. Yes, we are. I'm gradually getting things going here. Glad to have all of you along with us. Thanks for waiting. We had a power outage here. Don't know what happened exactly, but we'll figure it out here sooner or later. Push a few more buttons here and get a few more things going. Here we are. Okay. All righty. Back and going again. Don't know exactly what happened there, but I'm going to put on a short break, and I'll be right back so that we can get the studio all tuned up and ready to go again. Be right back. We'll be playing this. It'll last a few minutes. DNC podcast. I think you'll find it interesting.
Our podcast gives you a chance to regularly hear from prominent voices in the Democratic Party. Our guest today is Nina Martin of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She is the mother of two sons, both who have done tours in Iraq. She's here today to share with us her story about how the war in Iraq has impacted her family and families across the nation. Nina, thank you so much for joining us today, and welcome to the DNC's podcast.
Thanks for giving me a chance to respond to President Bush's speech. I've got some things that I'd like to say along with what I think a lot of the other military families would like to say, so I really appreciate this opportunity.
Nita, President Bush recently unveiled his latest plan to escalate the war in Iraq with an additional 21,500 troops. Prior to his address to the nation, what were you hoping to hear from the president?
I was hoping to hear a real plan, not a lot of rhetoric, which is all we've heard up to this point, and not supported by assumptions as to what the Iraqis are going to contribute to this. I was hoping that we would hear a plan for success, and that success plan would have what any plan for success should have, and that's an exit strategy. And what we got was an open-ended pledge to go on pretty much as we've been going on, but now we're going to do it at the risk of more American lives. And I just don't understand how he could have come to that conclusion, because with the exception of quantifying Iraqi commitment in terms of the numbers of resources and troops, there was really nothing new there.
Now, what's your response to what you did hear?
Well, I think it's unrealistic, first of all, to hinge a plan and call it a plan on something that's been a proven failure. We tried to secure Baghdad in July with 9,000 troops, additional troops, and the Iraqis were going to be right by our sides, just like he's saying now, but they only delivered a fraction of the Iraqi soldiers that they had pledged. So, I mean, my response is, why would anything be different now? And not only that, according to analysts after the speech, there aren't enough trained Iraqi soldiers to even come close to what the president claims their commitment is going to be. So that means that our soldiers are going to be bearing the overwhelming burden of this escalation, and now there's no end in sight because the president refuses to set any real benchmarks for turning the situation over to the Iraqis in the best interest of the Iraqi people and our military. And that's a political and diplomatic solution, as so many people have been telling him. This ceased long ago to be a situation which will respond to military action.
Nita, what seems to be lost in the talk about this new strategy is the strain that's being placed on our military. What are your thoughts on the impact that this escalation of the war will have on our military and their families?
Well, I think it's devastating, first of all, no matter where these troops come from. But the thing that struck me the most about it, because I'm the mother of a Marine in Iraq and another Marine son, you know, I know what the reality is, and I watch things very carefully to see what's going on in terms of troop call-ups. And just like there's nothing new in this new strategy, these are not new troops that we're talking about. This is primarily a shell game where deployments are being extended and tours are being moved up, and the Pentagon just announced that it has changed the rules for National Guard and Reserve deployments so that these groups can be deployed more often and for longer periods of time. And those are citizen soldiers who, you know, didn't sign on to be pretty much an active duty soldier or Marine. They've been basically conscripted, and it's having a devastating effect not only on the soldiers and Marines, but on the families, because they've spent nearly 4 years, if you think about it, in fear, and a lot of them in deprivation and certainly in uncertainty. And the divorce rates in the military are up. This is fact. Suicide rates are up. And we won't know for years about the toll from PTSD. And now we're looking at a stated plan that's not only continue down this road, but it's going to escalate deployments, and there's no end in sight. I think it's just inhumane, and these military service members and their families can't take much more of this.
Now, you talked a little bit about your own personal family experiences. What are some of the things you're hearing from other military families?
Well, what I'm hearing is, first of all, some of the members of the military are starting to speak out publicly. There was an application for redress to Congress recently that they actually signed. When it gets to the point where people in the military who are afraid to really speak out finally feel that they have no recourse but to do that, things have gotten really bad. And what I'm hearing from military families is really a level of fear. They've been very supportive, but now there's such a level of fear because with this escalation, we're going to see more death. We're going to see more people coming home maimed. And so there's going to be more fear for a longer time because it's going to be a more concentrated fighting than some of these families have been experiencing recently. And I think that they're looking at some of the other residual effects. I know I have a friend whose son lost someone that he was fighting with, and he was very upset. He had to be treated with antidepressants and things like this, and they sent him right out in the field. And apparently this does happen, and I think we need to be thinking about the impact on these people. You can't subject them to month after month after month and year after year of this horrific experience and then send them home to their families and expect them to be functioning human beings in our society without some help, and we're doing that too. So the families are not only worried about what's going on right now on the ground, they're terrified of that, but they're worried about what's going to happen afterward.
And Nita, finally, according to the Baltimore Sun, quote, the thousands of troops that President Bush is expected to order to Iraq will join the fight largely without the protection of the latest armored vehicles that withstand bomb blasts far better than the Humvees in wide use. What's your take on these reports?
My take on this is that this is absolutely the most appalling state of affairs. The idea that 2 years ago, or more than 2 years ago, we were having conversations about this. Families knew at the very start that we didn't have armored Humvees, that we didn't have equipment, and the military denied it, and the president denied it, and Rumsfeld denied it. 2 years ago, Rumsfeld was pretty much, well, maybe a year and a half ago, forced to admit that that was true. And so one would think that the greatest world power would be able to equip its army. And what's happened is because there was no strategy, because there was no after strategy in Iraq, it's become a graveyard for equipment. So any equipment that we had, when people come back from deployments, it's left there. They don't have the equipment to redeploy properly. And the idea was, theoretically, that they wouldn't need it. And they do. So we didn't have the planning. But the idea that we can do all of these other things and that we've spent hundreds of billions of dollars on this war, and we're asking people to go over and fight without the proper equipment to protect their lives, I think it's just criminal.
Nita, that's all I have. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
No, I just hope that there's an end in sight. I hope that Congress stands up and that people acknowledge that there has to be a real plan and that there has to be a way not only to achieve success, but there has to be an exit strategy, and that people will know that we need to take care of our military when they come home, that this is going to be a long, ongoing situation, and that they're going to have this new Congress in the spotlight, and they're going to hold people's feet to the fire and say, we need to do something about this situation, and we need to do it now. We don't need to do it months from now. We need to do it right now because the state of our military is dependent on it. Lives are dependent on it. And I think that that's the most important thing.
Nita, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right. There we have a canned interview from folks up at the DNC. The lady made a lot of sense, that's for sure. 866-546-5254. Sorry about the little snafu there. We had some kind of a power surge around here. Went out for just a second or a half a second. Of course, that's enough to do the number on all the electronics around here, you know. My word. Everything's sensitive today. Very, very sensitive. These all this equipment. But anyway, you're back, and I'm glad you're back, and I'm back. Everybody's back. And I see all the folks in the chat room are still there, so thanks for hanging around. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to give us a call. That's 866-546-5254. I got an email from somebody during the news. It was talking about the motivations of George W. Bush in this war. Didn't agree with my assessment of it, that it's about money. It's always about money. Their motivations are still about money. The Bush motivations, anyway, his administration, it's about money, a personal graft, if you will, power. And a lot of it's about Israel, and we don't need to forget about that. And not necessarily graft, money, power, and Israel in that order. But the Zionists, for example, they think of a final violent push can maybe permanently break up Iraq. And this meshes with Bush's desire not to go down in history as some sort of a president who lost another war against some peasants. And no matter how much the war bloggers and everybody else out there, the talking heads, and I'll claim that Iraq isn't like Vietnam, the fact is that it is a fear of Vietnam that they might have a Vietnam result that will continue to keep Americans in Iraq. That's it in a nutshell. There's still a bit of money to be made with, running mercenaries and weapons and all that, and the Republicans will argue that their presidential candidate's the only one capable of withdrawing us from Iraq with honor, with McCain in 2008. I know that's outrageous, but they'll probably get away with it, or at least they'll try, you know that. So, I don't know. It's always money. Follow the money. Should always follow the money. And I have a big question, and no one's been able to answer this yet. Who is it that we're going to kill in Iraq with our extra 21,500? Who is it? I know about the 4,000 Marines that are going to Anbar province. And you know the reason they're going there is because of an influx, they're saying anyway, intelligence sources are saying, of Al-Qaeda, that there's a stronghold of Al-Qaeda in Anbar province. And that's why they need to send in 4,000 more Marines. Now, correct me if I am wrong, but I believe the Bush administration did admit, sometime after this war was started, the Bush administration did admit that there was no known connection between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. In fact, that they had quite an adversarial relationship. And there's no way that Saddam Hussein would have allowed Al-Qaeda to operate inside his borders that he knew about. So we have an administration that straight up admitted that. And now we have 4,000 extra Marines sent into Anbar province because of the actions of Al-Qaeda. So what's the deal? What conclusion can we draw from this? Well, there's only one conclusion we can draw from it, is that we're going backwards. There were no Al-Qaeda in Anbar province or any place else in Iraq that we know of before the war started, but now there seems to be a goodly number of them in Anbar province, requiring the presence of 4,000 more Marines to shore up the ones that are already there. Is this not a huge admission of failure? I think it's the biggest admission of failure that I've yet seen in this war. You can look it up. Junior Bush himself and other people in the Bush administration, everybody but Cheney, has been out saying there was no known association between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. But all of a sudden, we got a bunch of Al-Qaeda in Anbar province requiring the presence of 4,000 more Marines. Now, it just doesn't make sense, does it? It shows us that we're going backwards. Backwards. Now there is a stronghold of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Is this fabulous flypaper scheme that they were talking about earlier? That if they laid down the flypaper and went in with our military, that it would attract all the terrorists, and all we'd have to do is kill them all there like one of those bug lights out in the backyard? Is that it? The bug light theory? Just attract them all to one place, and that's all we have to do? Is that what this administration's at? We're going to draw all the terrorists in the world inside Iraq, and then we're going to seal off the borders, we'll have them trapped, and we kill them all, and we'll all live happily ever after. Yeah. You know, there's no way out of this for the Bushies now. There's no way out of it. And the more they talk, the more they go on, the worse it looks, the more their poll numbers go down. What I want to know is, how do we know who we're going to kill over there? We're sending in all these extra people. How do we know who we're going to kill? They don't wear any uniforms. You know, we don't have the technical ability, evidently, nor the motivation to figure out who we're killing before we kill them. The Sunnis, the Shias, they all look the same at the end of a gun. So who is our enemy there? We have Maliki today saying that they've arrested and detained 400 of Muqtada al-Sadr's army. Want to bet? You want to bet that Maliki's forces have, in a official capacity, arrested and detained and imprisoned 400 of Muqtada al-Sadr's army? Bet you it never happened. And if they did, it's a scam. Because Muqtada al-Sadr owns Maliki's government. Owns it. He determines what goes on in that country right now. So who are we killing? Who? Do we go after the Sunnis? Do we have to go after the Shias? Or do we just wait till these actually see one of them shooting at us? Or we just shoot at anybody that's walking around that doesn't look like we do? Is that the idea? And we hear these stories all the time about here what things we say in this country that are helping the enemy. Emboldening the enemy. How many times have we heard that? Oh, they shouldn't. The Democrats shouldn't be saying that because it emboldens the enemy. My question is, why is Condoleezza Rice helping the terrorists then, if we're going to use that logic? And that's what Iraqi Prime Minister al-Maliki wants to know himself. Maliki disputed President Bush's remarks broadcast Tuesday that the execution of former Iraqi President Saddam Hussein, quote, looked like it was kind of a revenge killing, unquote, and took exception, and this is the part of this I like, he took exception to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's Senate testimony last week that Maliki's administration was on, quote, borrowed time. The prime minister said statements such as Rice's, quote, give morale boost for the terrorist and push them toward making an extra effort and making them believe that they've defeated the American administration. Maliki said, I can tell you that they have not defeated the Iraqi government. She was hoisted on her own shabby rhetorical petard on that one, was she not? How many times has Condoleezza Rice or any other Bush administration lackey complained that any criticism of their incompetence and failed policies helped the enemy? And now we've got Maliki saying that Condoleezza Rice did it and that Junior Bush did it. Oh, things are not going well. Not going well. And yet, how many more troops are we going to send in? 21,500 more. Delightful duty, indeed. Well, let's hear from George Bush himself.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week, our nation's blacks celebrate the birth of the great civil rights leader, Martin Luther King. Or perhaps it's his death. Either way, this legendary American once stood with Abraham Lincoln on the steps of a great monument and asked the world, "What are you dreaming about?" We must never forget his great words. "I am dreaming," he said, "that we will one day increase the troops in whatever foreign war might be going on in the future." We must take heed of these wise words, for they are just as true today as they were when he spoke them some 400 years ago. We're always going to remember Martin Luther King for standing up to the powerful new steam-powered spike driver on the railroads. Martin Luther King was the fastest steel-driving man of his day. So one day he challenged the machine head-on in a great steel-driving contest. Who would win, man or machine? Though he collapsed and died in his effort, he freed all the slaves in the end, sealing his legacy forever. Enjoy your Martin Luther King holiday, and God bless you.
Just a little message from Junior Bush. Thought you'd like to hear his Martin Luther King message that he gave earlier this week. You know what? You know what the sad part of it all is? That guy that does that, he's smarter than George Bush. I think you can tell. He has to be to think up some of those cute little things that he does. George could never think them up. I came across a news item. Where is it here? Oh, sure. I lost it. What did I do with that? I've got to find that. I came across a disturbing news item that's got nothing to do with politics. And now I've lost it. Well, I'm looking. It's great to be so organized every single day. Here we go. Every once in a while you read a story that just blows you away. You read it and you can feel your face becoming flushed. It's becoming red in the face, that you're becoming so pissed off you don't know what to do the farther you read this, because the story you're reading, you know it's true, and yet you think, how could it be? This is one of those things. And maybe you've seen this, but I was just appalled. Miracle cancer drug shrinks tumors. Costs $2. $2. Can't get funding. This is from Danielle Goddard, the All Headline News staff writer, Edmonton, Alberta. It is expected that there would be no problem securing funding to explore a drug that could shrink cancerous tumors and has no side effects in humans. But University of Alberta researcher Evangelos Melikakis has hit a stalemate with the private sector, who would normally fund such a venture. Melikakis' drug is none other than dichloroacetate, a drug which cannot be patented and cost pennies to make. It's no wonder he can't secure the $400 to $600 million needed to conduct human trials with the medicine. The drug doesn't have the potential to make enough money. So Melikakis told reporters that they will be applying to public agencies for funding, as pharmaceuticals are reluctant to pick up the drug. At roughly $2 a dose, there isn't much chance to make a billion on the cancer treatment over the long term. According to research on this drug, formerly used to fight metabolic disease in children, the drug apparently revitalized damaged mitochondria in cancer cells, effectively triggering cell death and shrinking the cells. One of the really exciting things about the compound is that it might be able to treat many forms of cancer. But because it's so cheap to make, they don't see a chance of making a big profit on it. And so it may not make it to the market because it doesn't have proper funding for the testing. That's shocking to me. That just bowls me over, that one of the worst scourges that faces humanity. Here's a guy who thinks he's got something that'll really help and can't get it brought to the open market because he can't find enough money to get testing done because it won't make enough money for the pharmaceutical companies. Oh, my God. Does that show where our priorities are or not? incredible. Absolutely incredible. It's hard for me, really hard for me to understand how that could be in this day and age. It really does. Well, I don't know. Hate to hear stories like that. I really do. Just every once in a while, I run across one. Thought you'd like to know about it. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Well, thank you, Gore. We had Gore Vidal on the program. What was it, last year? Been a while, but we had him on the program one day. Really, you can't say anything. If you can't say anything else about Gore Vidal, you have to say he's interesting. Very, very interesting. The day we had him on the program, I had probably a 15-minute conversation with him in the morning. And when that conversation went over, I was sitting there shaking my head. So not in a bad way. In a very good and entertaining way. Very interesting man, Gore Vidal. After DowningStreet.org, and you're talking about impeachment and all that sort of thing, I'm sure it's going to come up this weekend, this next weekend, rather. To give you an example, to give you an idea of what our schedule is going to be like next week, we will be traveling on Tuesday. We will have a best-of show on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, okay? Friday. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week, we'll have live shows from Washington. We will be coming to you from the Mayflower Hotel. We'll be attending a Families USA conference there on Thursday and Friday. On Tuesday, we're going to be attending the Moving America Forward conference. It's the Democrats on the State of the Union meeting at the Capitol building. It's a half-day conference on the Democratic message around the 2007 State of the Union speech and what the State of the Union really is about. We're going to have panel discussions and question and answer and reception with, lots of Democratic senators and other special guests being there. So it's going to be fun and interesting. I always enjoy those things. I'm sometimes the skunk in the room because I ask questions that people don't like to answer and press them for answers. So we'll see how that goes. And that's going to be in the Capitol building. And then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we'll be doing the show from the Mayflower Hotel, which is always fun. So we'll have lots of guests and excitement for you in Washington next week. And then on Saturday, before we leave town, we're going to have a chance to attend much of the rally, the impeachment rally that's taking place in Washington, D.C. So an exciting week for the Guy James Show next week, for yours truly as well. I'm going to meet with several politicians. We have appointments with them, and it's always good to sit down and talk to them, whether you like what they have to say or not, to get a feeling of where they're at and what they're thinking and sometimes who they really are when you get a chance to meet and talk to them. Let's go with the phone. Hi, you're on the – here we go. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I just wanted to tell you that when you go up to Washington, please tell them to be the Democrats to be Democrats and to stand up for we the people. Please, 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 please.
Well, we shall see. I know they're going to hear that, and they'll definitely hear it from me.
Yeah.
And
especially the one we've got here, he's kind of, our senator we never knew.
Well, I must say, I am having breakfast with him.
Yeah.
What is it? Wednesday morning next week, and I am somewhat surprised that he has come out lately against No More Troops. And
he has. Yeah.
That surprised me very much.
Yeah, that was a pleasant surprise.
So that means one thing, Juanita. They're hearing us.
Well, I hope so.
You know they wouldn't decide that on themselves.
You know what I mean by standing up for we the people? It's a whole bunch of things,
Yep.
Get rid of the guys in charge, impeach, whatever.
I think a lot of them are saying that or thinking that right now. A lot of them have to be thinking that right now. They're just a little too reticent to say it. But
did you know about the border guards that were being sent to jail?
Yes.
And I actually heard one person from California, one of the congressmen, I can't remember his name, Roger or something like that, and he is thoroughly disgusted with Bush.
Yeah.
And he was one of the most obnoxious Republicans.
Oh, I think I know who you mean. Rohrabacher.
Yeah, Rohrabacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he really talked. He came out and he said, at least, Bush has never responded to any of their messages. And he said that at least when you called Clinton, when he was in office, you know, you would get an answer.
Whether you liked it or not, you'd get an answer. Rohrabacher's an interesting
yeah.
guy. Without a doubt, he's got to be the worst dressed person in Washington D.C.
Well, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, you can see you can see him walking down the halls of the Capitol building or the House building, wherever he's got his office, and he'll be having like a plaid jacket and striped pants and a.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He always looks just hideous. I've seen him a few times there, and he's last time I was there, I was on the elevator with him, and I just kind of went, ooh.
Well, I guess the liberals got a hold of him in his dress, right?
Must it's have,
California.
Huh? He looks pretty wild. I think he's just one of those people who gets up in the morning and grabs, something and puts it on.
But I just wanted to wish you Godspeed, and we'll be thinking about you and praying about you, and may the Lord put His words in your mouth what to say.
Well, we need a good airplane, a good pilot, and we'll get up there.
There we go. Yep.
Thank you for your
travel mercies. That's what they call it, travel mercies.
Thank you very much.
So anyway, I just wanted to say that.
And we'll be taking calls next week, too, I'm pretty sure. So we'll look forward to talking to everybody. Thanks,
Maybe,
Bernita.
Maybe we can have some questions for them.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
My good friend, I don't want to make it sound that way. We're not bosom buddies, but I do know him. Greg Palast. I'm sure some of you know Greg Palast. He emailed me the other day, and he said, I know you don't ever read my website, but I ask you just one time to please read this part on your show. So, and he means it as a joke. You guys got a great sense of humor. I will read this off of Greg's website. It says, George W. Bush has an urge to surge. Just like every junkie, he asked for just one more fix. Let him inject just 21,000 more troops, and that will win the war. Been there, done that. In 1965, Tom Paxton's song, Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation. I'm trying everyone to please, though it isn't really war. We're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from the Vietnamese. And here we are, four decades later. Bush is asking us to save Iraq from the Iraqis. There's always a problem with giving a junkie another fix. It can only make things worse. Our maximum leader says that unless he gets to mainline another 21,000 troops, quote, Iran would be emboldened in its pursuit of nuclear weapons, and terrorists would have a safe haven from which to plan and launch attacks on the American people. Greg goes on to say, excuse me, but didn't we hear that same promise in 2003, nearly 4 years ago, on the eve of the invasion? The same George Bush promised, quote, the terrorist threat to America and the world will be diminished the moment that Saddam Hussein is disarmed, unquote. Instead of diminishing the threat from terrorists, Bush now admits Al-Qaeda has a home base in Anbar province, something inconceivable under Saddam's rule. 4 years ago, Bush promised us, quote, when the dictator has departed, Iraq can set an example to all the Middle East of a vital and peaceful and self-governing nation, end quote. Just send in the 82nd Airborne, and lickety-split, we'd have, quote, a new Iraq that is prosperous and free, end quote. Well, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Here's my question, says Greg. Who asked the waiter to deliver this dish? Who asked for the 21,000 soldiers? Who indeed? Who indeed asked? I would certainly like to know. I would like to know who gave him that advice. Why? I'd like to know if they did it of their own free will, or were they pressured because they were going to be fired? They knew they'd be shoved out of their job as a high-ranking general if they didn't say something Bush wanted to hear. I would like to know who told him that. First of all, I don't think he would decide arbitrarily decide on the number of troops that we needed there. I don't think he thinks he's that smart. Maybe he does. Next week, when we go to Washington, we're going to talk about the State of the Union on Tuesday afternoon. And we know that Bush is going to get out and give a speech about how rosy things are. Oh, yes, he'll say, you guys are very perceptive. See, this guy getting a cough drop. Yes. I didn't disguise that very well, now did I? I guess I had the little wrapper a little close to the microphone. Didn't want to get my hands all sticky, you know. The things I tell you. The things you ask. But we are going to be talking about the State of the Union. And I think the State of the Union right now can't get a whole lot worse. It really cannot. And we'll be talking about the economy for one thing. My God. When we have Bernanke, new head of the Federal Reserve, warning of a looming U.S. budget crisis that he says could be seriously weakened by budget strains if the government fails to address the deficits expected from the retiring baby boom generation. Bernanke, speaking on the Senate Budget Committee, said U.S. lawmakers should not be fooled by slight improvements in the budget deficit in the past year. He said official projections suggest that the unified budget deficit may stabilize or moderate further over the next few years. Unfortunately, he says, we are experiencing what seems likely to be the calm before the storm. Folks, this is the head of the Federal Reserve talking here. The calm before the storm. Dealing with the resulting fiscal strains will pose difficult choices for the Congress, the administration, and the American people. However, if early and meaningful action is not taken, the U.S. economy could be seriously weakened, with future generations bearing much of the cost. Well, now there's a rosy prediction from the head of the Federal Reserve. We shall see if Monday night, if Junior Bush agrees with him. Will he? Or will Bush get up and say how rosy it is now and how rosy it will be forevermore as long as the Republicans are in power? Is that what he will get up and say? I think that he will. We'll have a good answer for him, though. I'm sure of that. Hey, you still got time to call in. 866-546-5254. I spoke to somebody you could call a high-ranking Republican operative last night. And we always talk over off the record, which I appreciate very much. A lot of them won't give you the chance to do that. And I will tell you what. I have talked to him many times over the past few years. And the man has always been just like the rest of them. Bold, a little bit arrogant about the party, a little bit condescending about Bush and the Republican Party and so forth. I've not talked to the gentleman when he has been down like he was last night when I spoke to him. Not very happy about the outlook, not just for the country, and he doesn't give a damn about the outlook for George Bush, let me say that right here and now, insofar as it affects the legacy of the Republicans. But what he is fearing is some sort of a GOP nightmare scenario. And he started spelling it out. And what happens when Bush gets us far deeper into Iraq? We've seen the Pentagon study that says there's going to be far more deaths in 2007, and as many as 10,000 American deaths by the end of 2008. And Republicans are shaking in their boots over this. Not that they really give a damn about 7,000 more of our troops getting killed. I mean, so what, right? But they're worried that this is going to do irreparable harm to their party. And I'm inclined to agree. There have been times in American politics when one party has been in such lopsided control that the other party must have seemed hopeless for them for a long, long time to get it back. And I must admit, I felt a little bit that way a couple of years ago. The closer we got to election time for the midterms, as you well know, I changed my mind and predicted this victory that we have almost on the nose. But there were times when Johnson was in power and we had a huge majority. There were times here lately that the Republicans had a huge majority that it felt almost hopeless. But the Republicans are in a position right now, if they go along with Junior Bush on these war plans and it blows up in his face, which it's going to. God knows we hope it does not. But we know by looking at the past, which I'm afraid this administration seldom does, we know it's going to blow up in his face. And we know it's going to be an unmitigated disaster. I think we all know that. And we fear that. But that's how it is. If that happens, he will drag the Republican Party down in the sewer with him. Some of them will go kicking and screaming. Some of them will fight against him. Some of them will come out against him. Some of them will be willing to walk into the White House and ask him to resign. It appears many of them are willing to walk in, are ready and willing to walk in the White House right now and ask him to change his tactics. This will happen. And I think we can see it coming. And I think thinking Republicans, the realists amongst them, do see this coming. I'm sure that they do. In fact, like I said, this is the second one I've talked to that sees it coming and doesn't see a way out unless there's a miracle in Iraq. Some sort of a miracle that, if it is going to happen, sure, we don't have any evidence of it right now. We can't see anything good coming of it right now. But there they are. They're rolling the dice. Bush is rolling the dice, hoping for some good outcome to something that, he's trying 100-to-1 shot to get all his money back. He is that gambler on the table that gambled away $10,000 and he's got $100 left and he's going to put it all in on this gamble. All or nothing. So we shall see how it turns out. I hope the man's right. I hope this thing does something to end this war. I hope it does something to stabilize that government so that we can get the hell out of there. Do I seem positive about it? Certainly not. And no thinking person does. My goodness, where's the time go? The second hour is almost up. Sorry about that little snafu we had a little earlier. One of those things. Power goes out. Can't do a whole lot about it. But anyway, we're up and running. And so glad to have all of you with us. I appreciate each and every one of you. I love getting your emails. I try and answer as many of them as I can. I haven't done a really good job lately. I've been getting ready for this trip next week, packing and all the electronics and all that we have to check and get ready in the software and all. Well, anyway, we'll make it. But I look forward to joining you again next week. Again, we'll be live Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from the nation's capital. We'll have good shows from there, I promise you. We'll have some good guests and some interesting things to talk about. In the meantime, you've been listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. And always remember, you heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. Talk to you later, gang. Have a good one.